Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Is everybody in? The ceremony is about to begin.
We can invent kingdoms of our own, grand purple thrones, those chairs of lust and love we must in beds of rust. Steel doors lock in prisoners' screams, and Muzak AM rocks their dreams. No black men's pride to hoist the beams while mocking angels sift what seems to be a collage of magazine dust scratched on foreheads of walls of trust. This is just jail for those who must get up in the morning and fight for such unusable standards while weeping maidens show off penury and pout ravings for a mad staff.
Ha ha! Welcome to yet another very special edition of Inside Wayne Manor with Stephen Wayne and friends. I am Stephen Wayne. Thank you very much for subscribing to this podcast, and thank you very much if you're just checking it out. I hope all of you are healthy and safe, and it looks like, well, we're going to be getting back to normal. As I said, this is a very special edition, and it all revolves around James Douglas Morrison. Love him or hate him, he is an iconic rock star, a legend, both dead and alive. Shaman, Dionysus, but most importantly, a poet. I personally have been fascinated with Jim Morrison since I first read No One Here Gets Out Alive by Jerry Hopkins and Danny Sugarman when it was first published back in 1980. And by the way, I was in high school. I loved The Doors. And believe me, I knew it wasn't everybody's cup of tea, but I respected the band not only for their dark music, but Jim's dark lyrics as well. And on July 3rd in 1971 in Paris, France, Jim Morrison died, if that's what you believe. And after all these years, I am still intrigued by Mr. Mojo Rising. So to honor the 50th anniversary of his so-called death, I give to you a very special Inside Wayne Manor with Stephen Wayne and friends, Jim Gone for 50, Part 1. It is Jim Morrison by Jim Morrison, a collection of audio from previous interviews throughout his career. But we start this podcast with the people that knew him best. Biographer and manager Danny Sugarman, guitarist Robbie Krieger, drummer John Densmore, and the late, great Ray Manzarek. These particular audio pieces were taken from the brilliant broadcast by legendary LA DJ and friend of the Doors, Jim Ladd, from his special audio autobiography, which was called No One Here Gets Out Alive, which, by the way, is available on Rhino Records.
About mid-July, probably around the 4th of July weekend, I wouldn't be surprised, we're out on the beach, and who comes walking down the beach but Jim Morrison. I said, hey, man, what are you doing here? And you back? And he said, no, I never left. I stayed down in Venice, getting stoned and taking acid and writing songs. I said, oh yeah, far out, man, writing songs. Because I never realized Jim could write songs. I just knew he was a good guy and did write poetry and like that, I suppose. But all of a sudden, he became a songwriter. And I said, well, you know, let me hear one of the songs. And he sang Moonlight Drive. He just sang the song out. Let's swim to the moon, let's climb through the tide, you know, just sing the melody. Penetrate the evening that the city sleeps to hide. Let's swim out tonight, love, it's our turn to die. Park beside the ocean on our moonlight drive. And I said, whoa, wait a minute, man. Can I hear what I could do to that? You know, just put it into a minor, dark, moody, funky, organy, spacey kind of thing. So that's how we were born. That's where the Doors came from.
We just really knew each other musically, and we knew Jim too, you know. It's funny, the three of us used to talk about how we could make Jim move around, sort of. We knew sort of how to rile him up. I mean, he'd be so stoned or whatever, but there were little things we could do where we could just make him go into some dance or something, you know. Because he was so open, you know, just take me, you know. He lived in the subconscious, it seems like, so he'd just jump off the stage or do anything, you know. But there was a connection there, and we could kind of steer him around at times. And then, of course, other times he'd completely do whatever he wanted.
Well, I think one thing that I could say was that Morrison was the only, if not one of the few, performers that I knew that really believed it, what he was saying, you know. He lived that life, you know. He wasn't just up there doing his trip and then he'd go home and then watch TV and have a beer and laugh at it all, you know, and laugh all the way to the bank. He was a guy that he lived that life that he lived out on stage all the time. And when he went home, it was to some cheap motel somewhere, and he just hung out until the next show, you know. Sometimes, like, he would be the most great guy you've ever want to meet, you know. He'd just be super polite and together and clean and everything else, you know. But then the next day, he'd be completely the other way. But, you know, all those stories are true, most of them. And, like, you know, his whole life was right on the edge, you know. And that's why when people could sense that when he was on stage, that, you know, there was always something under there ready to happen. And, you know, if they were lucky that night, it might happen, you know. All I can say is that he was totally committed to living the life of the revolution.
The Doors were the house band at the Whiskey. I think they were opening for Love or Van Morrison. And Jim was staying at the Tropicana, and Ray and John go down to get him. Ray doesn't show up for the first set, and Ray sings, and they go down to the Tropicana, and they're knocking on Jim's door. Come on, Jim, we know you're in there. Open up, man. Door cracks open, and you see this one eye, man, just blazing with life and vision. And Jim opens the door, and he's standing there naked, and he's just got hands full of acid tabs. Jim Morrison had an incredible ability to hold drugs. And they took him up to the Whiskey. And finally they get to their last song and Jim's going into the end and he starts improvising. And it was really the first Doors improvisation. Anybody that saw the Doors knew that Jim would launch to incredible cascades of poetry. Just incredible, man. What a genius.
And now the Lizard King speaks about Jim Morrison. He describes himself, the Doors' music, and the band's longevity, and most importantly, his image. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. James Douglas Morrison.
Shut up!
Now, is that any way to behave at a rock and roll concert? You don't want to hear that for the next half hour, do you? No. All right, Come on. Damn, give the singer some, man. All right.
Name?
Jim.
Occupation.
Me and my mother and father, I'm not sure if a sister was there, whether she was alive or not, and a grandmother and a grandfather were driving through the desert at dawn. And a truckload of Indian workers had either hit another car or just, you know, I don't know what happened. There were Indians scattered all over the highway, bleeding to death. So the car pulls up and stops. And I'm just a kid, you know, so I have to stay in the car with the women, you know. I don't know whether I'm crazy or what. But the reaction I get now, thinking about it, looking back, is that possibly the soul of one of those Indians, or maybe several of them, just ran over and just jumped into my fucking brain, and they're still in there.
Although there's no separation between personal life and this life, it's all the same life. Well, just like, does a student have a personal life? So when he's having his social life, he's not a student anymore. It's, well, like when a policeman's off duty, he's still a policeman.
Well,
Well, you know, it's like being married or being a member of a family. You know, there's always strife. You know, people that live together fight a lot. I've noticed that we went through a period of kind of, it was really getting strained, and in the last few months, everything is really, really smoothed out. I think when you're creating well, when the music is going well, everybody's happy. It's only when your creativity kind of dies off a little bit, then everybody starts feeling the strain. You know, the relations are very good these days.
Sensuous, evil, a mood of mystery and strangeness, and also a little bit of religion thrown in there too.
Jim Morrison, singer.
The Doors.
L.A., San Francisco, all up and down the coast. West Coast.
West is best.
The Doors. The Unconscious.
The gap is getting wider day by day. Strange days. Rebellion, chaos, disorder, and activity that appears to have no meaning. A central theme or a motif, a thread running through the songs we don't have, but we definitely do have an atmosphere or a mood which might be characterized as an awareness of the strange, that something's wrong, something's not quite right. The old are getting older and the young are getting somewhere.
And we may have been one of the first groups to come along that was openly self-conscious about being performers. In other words, reflecting on our own career as it was happening. It's not that we were trend conscious, we were doing exactly what we would have done anyway, but it came at the right time when you could get away with expressing sentiments like that. More than writing music and as a singer, any of that, I think my greatest talent was for, I had an instinctive knack for self-image propagation.
I think we're the band you love to hate. So it's been that way from the beginning. You know, we're universally despised. I kind of relish the whole situation.
I think of myself as an intelligent, sensitive human being with the soul of a clown, which always forces me to blow it at the most important moments.
Jim Morrison was truly an agent of chaos. Several arrests, including one in New Haven and Las Vegas, but his most infamous was in Miami. He was born in the state of Florida, and he returned not to greet his fellow Floridians, but to make a mistake and a mishap that changed how we view musical censorship and the freedom of free speech. The Miami incident.
Hey, listen, I'm lonely. I need some love, you all. Come on. Ain't nobody gonna love my ass. Come on. Hey, there's a bunch of people way back there that I didn't even notice. Hey, how about 50 or 60 of you people come up here and love my ass? Come on.
I think I was just fed up with the image that had been created around me, in which I had sometimes consciously, most of the time unconsciously, cooperated with. It got too much for me to really stomach, and so I just kind of put an end to it in one glorious evening.
You're all a bunch of fucking idiots! Just slaves, letting everybody push you around. What are you gonna do about it? What are you gonna do about it?
President of the Greater Miami Crime Commission, I'm calling upon the Dade County Grand Jury and the State Attorney's Office to immediately take criminal action against those that were responsible for the deplorable condition and situation that occurred at the Dade County Auditorium this past weekend when the group known as the Doors, the rock and roll group, attempted to precipitate a riot.
We have taken out two warrants for Jim Morrison. One of them is for indecent exposure. The other is for the use of obscene languages during his performance at Dinner Key Saturday night.
I think that nudity is, it's really a cyclical phenomenon. I think it comes, it gets very liberal and extreme, and it goes back, reacts the other way, and it just seems to be a cycle in entertainment.
In other words, you feel that the same liberalism performed in the theater, acting, should be also generated in music.
Well, in the realm of art and theater, I do think that there should be complete freedom for the artist and performer. I'm not personally that convinced that nudity is always, you know, a necessary part of, you know, a play or film, but the artist should feel free to use it if he feels like it.
This court is expected to be crowded with local Teeny Bopper fans, just happy to be in the same room with Morrison. Defense lawyers predict a six-week trial, but whether the long-haired court watchers will sit by that long for a chance to light the rock singer's fire is something else again.
Jim, you're facing 3.5 years in state prison for the Miami incident. The scope of this trial goes way beyond rock and roll. It's really about the First Amendment.
What we're testing down there is the issue of artistic freedom of expression, you know, and it's a significant issue, and the trial is very interesting.
You seem confident.
Right. And hopefully it'll be over in time for me to do a European tour.
I had a trial of about 6 weeks. It was very interesting. And the felony rap was dismissed, and I'm still stuck with two misdemeanors, which could add up to about 8 months in jail. I maintain that I'm admitting the charge of the public profanity, but I'm denying the exposure charge, and so we're going to appeal that for as long as it takes to get it dismissed. It may take another year or two.
Up until that point, rock and roll had never been put on trial like that before. Jim Morrison was acquitted on all but two misdemeanor charges and sentenced to 6 months hard labor and fined $500. He was appealing that conviction, but it was never heard because he passed away in 1971. Although pardoned in 2010, the outgoing Florida governor, Charlie Crist, said this: "The pardon isn't going to settle the boundaries of artistic freedom or alter the Morrison myth in the annals of rock history. Nor is it likely to settle the ongoing debate about whether Morrison ever actually did pull his zipper down at the concert that night. But it does send a message about forgiveness. Too little, too late," recalls the surviving Doors members and the Morrison family. Yeah. We are going to wrap up this very special edition of Inside Wayne Manor with Stephen Wayne and Friends, Jim Gone for 50, part one of our two-part series. Many thanks to all the fine interviewers that sat down with Mr. Jim Morrison and shared their audio with the world, including Mike Lazar, Jeffrey Cannon, Howard Smith, Bob Kurush, and Sally Stevenson. And of course, I would like to thank the Doors themselves. John Densmore, Mr. Robbie Krieger, and of course, the late, great Ray Manzarek, and Mr. James Douglas Morrison. Coming up in part two of Jim Gone for 50, Inside Wayne Manor with Stephen Wayne and Friends, we will explore more about Mr. Morrison, also his predictions of the future of culture and music, his death, and I'll share with you an interview I did that was never broadcast until now, with the author who made us believe in Jim Morrison all over again. As always, I would like to thank you very, very much for subscribing to this podcast. And if you're a fan of Jim Morrison like I am and a fan of the Doors, thank you very much for checking it out. Until we do this again, stay safe and healthy. Peace!
Everything Inside Wayne Manor with Stephen Wayne and friends can be found at www.insidewaynemanor.com. Episodes, playlists, contact, social media, and more. All inside WayneManor.com. I'm Studio Guy, and you can reach me at StudioGuy.net.
But I tell you this, man. I tell you this. I don't know what's going to happen, man. But I want to have my kicks before the whole shithouse goes up in flames. All right. All right.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. Is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.